Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the websites BBC and IMDb. Question number one, which of the following is true about the fear of Friday the 13th? Is it A, Fridays historically have been known as Judgment Day? Or is it B, calendars have always avoided having 13 months? Is it C, the bad luck reputation of this day dates back to about 900 A.D.? Or D, fear of Friday the 13th is known as paraskevidekatriaphobia? So how did Friday the 13th get such a bad rap anyway? And question number two, what was the original name of the band that became known as the Beatles? Was it A, the Silver Bugs? Was it B, the Velvet Underground? Was it C, the Quarrymen? Or was it D, the Crickets? The Beatles. From which band name did they emerge? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of June the 13th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1843, that Edvard Hagerup Grieg was born. This famous Norwegian pianist, conductor, and teacher was known for such compositions as Peer Gynt. Born today, 1843, Grieg. And it was 60 years ago today, 1965, that Paul McCartney recorded Yesterday. And that was 1965, today. And in country and bluegrass music news, we have this article titled, Lineup Set for Raleigh's New Bluegrass Gospel Music Fest. This is written by Chena Blackman, News and Observer, June the 1st, 2025. The Raleigh Wide Open Music Festival, a new bluegrass, gospel, and Americana music festival, has announced its inaugural lineup for the event taking place in downtown Raleigh on October 3rd to 4th, 2025. The lineup highlights include bluegrass, Balsam Range, Blue Cactus, Carolina Bluegrass, Earl White String Band, and Slippery Hill Bluegrass. In Americana music, we have Dom Flemons, Charlie Lowry, Sonny Miles, and Stillhouse Junkies. In gospel, there's the Gospel Jubilators, Holler Choir, and Kingdom United Voices. Folk music, A Nest of Singing Birds, Eliza Meyer, and the New Carolina Tar Heels. Others include Big Fat Gap, Cabin Creature, Eliza Meyer and the New Carolina Tar Heels, Gospel Jubilators, the Gravy Boys, Hank Patty and the Current Holler Choir, Jalacy Katie, Jim Lauderdale, Joseph DeCosimo, Kingdom United Voices, Legacy Chorale, the Loblollies, Nixon, Blevins, Williams, and Omar Ruiz Lopez, among others. Event details include the dates, October 3rd to 4, 2025, location downtown Raleigh, including City Plaza, Davie Street, and Martin Street. Stage. Six stages will be featured, showcasing music across various genres. Other activities include food, drink, art, market, and vendor stalls will also be available. Free admission. The festival is free and friendly to the family. The new festival comes after the International Bluegrass Music Association decided to move its festival out of the Raleigh area, relocating the event to Chattanooga, Tennessee. It had previously been held in Raleigh for the previous 12 years. Pinecone, the local nonprofit organization that produced Raleigh's last bluegrass festival, partnered with PNC Bank to launch this new festival. A full schedule of events and vendor information will be available on the Raleigh Wide Open website.
Early in the morning, the sun was up and the sky was a very blue. Without a warning, as I looked out, my thoughts returned to you. A noise in the city made the children run and hide themselves away. And thunder boomed and lightning filled the sky.
ELO's Rain Is Falling introduces our classical music news. These albums show why 1975 was peak orchestral rock slash classical music. Steve Wright is the writer of this article, published on the 6th of June, 2025, in BBC Music, Classical Music. For orchestral rock, the ambitious genre that marries the bombast and rebellion of rock with the sophistication of classical music, 1975 remains its miraculous year. By then, a confluence of musical evolution, cultural receptivity, and landmark releases helped crystallize a sound which was at once complex, emotive, and accessible. This was not merely a moment of innovation, it was a moment of perfection. Bands and solo artists didn't just experiment with classical features, they wove them seamlessly into their musical DNA. The result was a series of groundbreaking albums that redefined what rock music could be. Orchestral rock's origin stretched back to the late 1960s with bands like the Moody Blues, Days of Future Past, 1967, and Procol Harum's A Whiter Shade of Pale from 1967, who first dared to drape rock's electric guitars and pounding drums with strings and choirs. But those early efforts often used classical instrumentation as ornamentation. By the early 1970s, the genre began to evolve, with artists such as Yes, Genesis, and King Crimson exploring complex structures, thematic albums, and extended compositions. Orchestral elements were no longer just sweeteners, they were structural. By 1975, the creative journey had reached a summit. Artists were no longer dabbling in orchestral features. They were composing rock symphonies. Coming in at number one, Electric Light Orchestra, Face the Music. ELO had always been a group determined to blend the catchy immediacy of pop with the grandeur of symphonic music. Face the Music marked a turning point for ELO. After experimenting with Baroque influences on earlier albums, Jeff Lynne streamlined the band's approach without sacrificing their orchestral soul. And that was ELO playing Rain Is Falling. Strange Magic, with its lush harmonies and layered textures, feels more like a love letter to classical romanticism via modern psychedelia. Every track on that album feels meticulously arranged, yet emotionally direct. ELO proved orchestral rock could be both ambitious and commercially viable, a bridge between prog rock excess and pop clarity. Other albums discussed in this article included Number 2, the band called Renaissance, and their album Scheherazade, and Other Stories. Coming in at number 3, Rick Wakeman's The Myth and Legends of King Arthur and Knights of the Round Table, that album. And at number 4, Steve Hackett, his album A Voyage of the Acolyte. And number 5, Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here. Pink Floyd's extraordinary Wish You Were Here deserves inclusion for its expansive arrangements, emotional weight, and symphonic ambition. Shine On You, Crazy Diamond, unfolds like a tone poem, its layered textures and recurring motifs echoing classical form. Floyd may not have used traditional orchestras, but their use of studio techniques and instrumental interplay produced a lush cinematic sound that aligned with the orchestral rock ethos. The 13-minute opening of Shine On builds with the slow, deliberate grace of a symphony, each instrument introduced like a soloist in a concerto. The article skips down, ends with this. The 5 albums spotlighted here are not only landmarks in orchestral rock, they represent the genre's full spectrum, from pop-infected symphonies to mythic operas and introspective journeys. Each offers a different answer to the question, what happens when rock and classical music collide? In 1975, the answer was magic. Sly and the Family Stone, Hot Fun in the Summertime, introduces our R&B music news. It's titled Sly Stone, pioneering leader of funk band Sly and the Family Stone, dies at 82. This is written by Mark Osborne, June the 9th, 2025, abcnews.com. Sly Stone, the pioneering leader of the funk band bearing his name, has died. After a prolonged battle with COPD and other underlying health issues, Sly passed away peacefully, surrounded by his 3 children, his closest friend, and his extended family. Stone, whose real name was Sylvester Stewart, formed a band with his brother Freddie and sisters Loretta and Rose at an early age. The band played gospel music, seemingly a far cry from the funk and psychedelia he would later become known for. But Sly and the Family Stone would become known for its blending of music styles. Dance to the Music peaked at number 8 on the Billboard Pop Singles Chart in 1967. Sly said, "I poured everything into those songs." Everyday People hit number one on the Billboard charts, and Hot Fun in the Summertime, the song playing in the background now, peaked at number two on the charts in 1969. The group entered the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1993. And in music research and technology news, we have this article titled, Inventor Replaces His Boring Doorbell with a Miniature Piano. Ding dong! A funky new doorbell for piano lovers is here. This is published on 10th of June, 2025 in ClassicFM.com. The writer, Lucy Hicks Beach. One person's DIY project had brought a tuneful twist to the traditional doorbell. Arpan Mondal has crafted a piano-style doorbell that lets visitors announce their arrival with a musical touch. This design replaces the standard doorbell chime with five playable piano keys, three white and two black, each producing a distinct note when pressed. Mondal used an ESP32 microcontroller, which reads the state of five 3D printed piano keys and triggers an audio sample of piano keys. Mondal also wanted the keys to feel more like a real piano, so decided to use micro-limit switches, which create a satisfying soft click, like you are pressing actual piano keys. The first electric doorbell was invented in 1831 by the first secretary of the Smithsonian Institution, Joseph Henry. But it wasn't until the 1930s that people started having tuneful doorbell chimes. So, next time you're buying a doorbell for your new home, perhaps think outside the traditional ding-dong box and give your guests the chance to start their visit with a musical moment. And by the way, the accompanying photograph shows what looks like about a 5-inch by 9-inch horizontal panel keyboard displaying the five keys. Floyd's Money, from their 1973 album, The Dark Side of the Moon, introduces our rock and pop music news. The title of the article? Legendary 1960s rock band still holds album record 50 years later. This album sold over 45 million copies worldwide. It's written by Isabella Torrigiani in Parade magazine on the 8th of June, 2025. Over 50 years after its release, Pink Floyd's The Dark Side of the Moon still holds one of the most impressive records in Billboard history. the legendary 1973 album, which includes iconic tracks like Money, the song playing in the background now, Us and Them, and The Great Gig in the Sky, has spent 989 weeks on the Billboard 200 chart. Recently, The Dark Side of the Moon made a notable jump from number 42 to number 24 on Billboard's top album sales chart, which only counts physical purchases. The numbers prove fans aren't just streaming the album, they're still buying it in droves, even decades later. With vinyl making a major comeback, the record also landed at number 15 on the vinyl albums chart in terms of overall sales. The Dark Side of the Moon continues to outshine the competition. With over 45 million copies sold worldwide, it surpassed classic albums like The Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band and Michael Jackson's Bad. When Pink Floyd, made up of David Gilmour, Nick Mason, Richard Wright, and Roger Waters, first introduced the album in 1973, the title wasn't guaranteed. Another band, Medicine Head, had released an album called The Dark Side of the Moon a year earlier, nearly forcing Pink Floyd to scrap the name altogether. We were annoyed because we had already thought of the title before Medicine Head came out, Gilmour reportedly once said. Fortunately for Pink Floyd, Medicine Head's version didn't gain traction and the iconic title was up for grabs. If things had gone differently, the album might have been called Eclipse, according to the guitarist. While reflecting on the album's lasting impact, Wright explained why it continues to resonate with fans in a 2001 interview. I think it's a combination of the lyrics and the feeling of some of the music with the lyrics. Obviously, that's what makes it a good song, he said. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which of the following is true about the fear of Friday the 13th? Is it A, Fridays historically have been known as quote-unquote Judgment Day? Actually, they have been known as Hangman's Day. That's the day on which that particular execution was traditionally held. But that hasn't been shown to be associated with the fear of Fridays, let alone fear of Friday the 13th. Was it B, calendars have always avoided having 13 months? Well, not really. Some earlier calendars would make periodic adjustments every few years by adding an extra month. Was it C, the bad luck reputation of this day dates back to about 900 A.D.? Actually, the fear is only a little bit over about 100 years. Is it D, fear of Friday the 13th is known as Paraskevitika triophobia? Yes, this is the name to that particular fear. Correct answer, therefore, answer D. Also note that because of the superstitions around the number 13, some hotels in modern societies will have no room number 13, while a lot of buildings with multiple floors will simply skip floor number 13, jumping straight from 12 to 14. Also, some airlines in these modern societies, quote-unquote, refuse to have a row 13 in their planes. While the weekday Friday and the number 13 have their own superstitions, the combination of the two produces the fear of bad luck. It also appears to be relatively recent fear, perhaps dating back only about 100 years. And the answer to our second question, what was the original name of the band that became known as the Beatles? Was it A, the Silver Bugs, B, the Velvet Underground, C, the Quarrymen, or D, the Crickets? Correct answer? Answer C, the Quarrymen. As noted by Ellie Hook in The Mirror on May the 30th, 2025, in an article titled fans only just realizing the Beatles once had a very different name with a surprising meaning. Founded by John Lennon, Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, and George Harrison in 1960, everyone now knows the Beatles as the Beatles. But funnily enough, this hasn't always been the case. The story behind how the quartet of musicians came up with their iconic name has left fans baffled for decades. But it turns out there's a lot more to their moniker than people know. In the early days, the band, which went on to sell 600 million records worldwide, originally went by the Quarrymen, and then briefly considered the Silver Beatles. The eventual choice of the Beatles was a playful nod to Buddy Holly and the Crickets, with a clever twist on the word beat, referencing the band's association with beat music and the beat generation. But in true Beatles fashion, Lennon often insisted that the name came to him in a vision of a man on a flaming pie who said, "You are Beatles with an A." Now, whether this is true or simply Lennon's quirky humor remains a mystery. Talking about how he actually came to the name The Beatles, Lennon explained, "I was looking for a name like the Crickets that meant two things, and from Crickets I got to Beatles. And I changed the spelling to B-E-A, because B-E-A Beatles didn't mean two things on its own. When you said it, people thought of crawly things, and when you read it, it was beat music, since we added the B-E-A-T-L-E-S. The band name Quarrymen probably came from the fact that men working in quarries worked with rock, just as they did with rock music. So, let's close out today's program with John Lennon leading his band, called the Beatles, in a 1961 cover of Ain't She Sweet, from their Hamburg, Germany tour.
Oh, ain't she sweet? We see you walking down that street. Yes, I ask you very confidentially, ain't she sweet?
Well, we've run out of time for today's program. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music review underwritten by Bill McClure. Tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.